Are you sure?
Here's the 30-second lesson on what legends know. Never ask a bride why she's getting married. Don't wear a skirt on a windy day. Deodorant is not a shower. Don't sniff chili flakes. And don't forget, saving is not investing. Legends don't just save, they invest in mutual funds. Mutual fund investments are subject to market risks. Read all scheme-related documents carefully.
This is the election season now. Very soon, elections are going to be announced and notified. And there is a lot of interesting talk going on, claims, counterclaims, claims, etc. This ball has been set into motion by Prime Minister Narendra Modi himself when he said that this time we will cross 400. That is for NDA, he said 400, which means BJP 370, he said, BJP at least 370, and the alliance 400. Now, wherever you go, wherever I go, I find people asking the same question. So do you think something like 370 is possible for BJP? Do you think something like 400 is possible? And since a lot of people you meet, who you run into, are BJP voters, or who would at least like to be overheard as being BJP voters, right? If somebody is asking you something and they think that somebody might be overhearing in a crowd or someplace, they will be better off, they'll be more comfortable if other people hear that they are expecting a big BJP victory, which is not such an unreasonable understanding of the political situation as well, because BJP is ahead by a very long distance. So the question is 350 possible? 350 par? 400 par ho sakta hai? 400 par kyun nahi ho sakta hai? And then comes the cutting question, or the key question, which is that agar Rajiv Gandhi ka 400 par hua, if Rajiv Gandhi could go past the 400 mark in 1984, ultimately got 414, then why is it impossible to imagine that BJP could do something like that? Now you immediately instinctively think that, oh no, the South, the Congress party also swept the South, or mostly used to sweep the South, although it's not quite true. In 84, didn't quite happen that way. Congress party did not sweep the South. It did very well, but did not sweep the South, and I will tell you more about it. Or you can say, oh, that was a different kind of politics, a different kind of environment. There was a wave of nationalism. People were feeling insecure after Indira Gandhi's assassination. There was sympathy for Indira Gandhi. But most importantly, since I covered that election, I would say that there was an upsurge of nationalism. Also, the ad campaigns that Rajiv Gandhi and Congress party put out, they touched that button, that sensitive button, because Indians can be very poor, they can be poor, miserable, lacking in everything, but they are very patriotic. And when it comes to national security, they leave everything aside. Now, some of that also obtains today. So we thought it might be a theoretical exercise, but we thought it might be interesting to see how did Rajiv Gandhi get his 414, or how is that pie divided, right? If the pie in the country, the entire pie is 543, it was 541 in that election. If it's 543, how did he get to 414? And if Narendra Modi's BJP has to get there, what does it have to do? I said early on, it's a theoretical exercise because we are not even counting the allies at this point. Because the Congress party's numbers were not with the allies. These were just Congress party's numbers. I know that Narendra Modi always competes with the Nehru Gandhi family, ideologically with Jawaharlal Nehru, and politically with every member of the Gandhi family. And that is where Rajiv Gandhi's 414 remains some kind of a holy grail. Holy grail, or Hindi mein kya bolunga usko? The closest thing, old grandmother story, is Nagmani, right? Something very rare, and something if you get, everything is attained in life. So the holy grail, Nagmani if you choose to call it, the holy grail for Narendra Modi and BJP would then be to best that 414 mark. Now, I'm one of those who believe that that 414 is not possible. It's not been possible all this while, in 40 years since the 1984. And it will not be possible going ahead in the foreseeable future, because that was a one-party nation, or that became a one-party nation. And even before that, the party was dominant. The fact is that BJP has already been dominant for two elections. In some ways, It's become a one-party nation already. Although the BJP's maximum still has been only 303, which, as I had mentioned earlier in one of the other earlier episodes, and also in maybe in a couple of national interest columns, that even when the BJP has completely demolished and decimated its opposition, reduced the Congress party to low two figures, in one case to 44, 52, in 2014 and 2019 respectively, it has only got 282 and 303 seats. That's because the BJP's votes are concentrated in the Hindi heartland and the two western states, that's Gujarat and Maharashtra. So it's not been able to expand its footprint in many other areas, except maybe in Karnataka. You can say Karnataka, it did very well in the south, one state. And that is what has placed limitations on the BJP. And that's why even what looks like a huge victory, a big sweep, only adds up to 303 seats. Now, if you take that 303 as the base and then look at the Congress party's 414. So what does it take the BJP to get to 414? To understand that, first we have to see where that gap of nearly 110 seats come from. The gap of 110 between Rajiv Gandhi's Congress in 1984, December of 1984, and BJP of the summer of 2019 or May of 2019. Just look at the states, and you'd be surprised by states where the difference comes. Uttar Pradesh, very interesting. It looks like BJP has swept the two elections in Uttar Pradesh, 2014 and 2019. The fact, however, is that in 1984, the Congress party did much better than that. So in 2019, BJP got 62. Two seats went to its ally, Apna Dal, that is Anupriya Patel's party. Against that, the Congress party under Rajiv Gandhi got 83 seats in Uttar Pradesh. 83 in Uttar Pradesh, BJP 67. That leaves a gap of 16 seats. BJP won 62 out of 80. In 2019, but if you extrapolate this to the situation in 1984 when Uttarakhand was a part of UP, then we can say BJP won 67 because they also swept all five in Uttarakhand in 2019. Now you might say some have gone to the BJP's allies, right? But we are only comparing BJP and the Congress, because if the BJP has the pretensions of being the new Congress, which it is, three-fourths of the way through, for it to become fully like the Congress, its ballpark then, its default numbers in Lok Sabha elections have to reach the range at least of 350, which used to be the default range for Congress party until that unusual election of 1984. So, 16 seats gap you see in Uttar Pradesh. The second biggest gap, and to which I don't think the BJP has answered as yet, is Tamil Nadu. Now, that is counterintuitive. Tamil Nadu, the Congress party got 25 seats. And so all the 25 is a plus for the Congress party, because BJP did not get any seats in Tamil Nadu in 2019. Now, even when I saw it, although I covered the 1984 election, even when I saw it, I was taken aback. How did the Congress party get 25 seats? I can understand 91 if they got more seats in Tamil Nadu, because that's when Rajiv Gandhi got assassinated there. But 84, why did they get so many seats? And then I figured that's because of the alliance there. Those days, the Congress, ADMK in this case, alliances used to work in a way that Congress was given many more seats for Lok Sabha and the Dravid party took a lot more seats for Vidhan Sabha. So you take the state, I take the center, jo tera hai wo tera hai, jo mera hai wo mera hai. So you do that. That is the kind of arrangement there was. And that's how the Congress party won 25 seats in Tamil Nadu. Now I know the Prime Minister has been going to Tamil Nadu a lot. He's investing quite a bit of political capital and time in Tamil Nadu. I'm not quite sure if it'll translate into many seats right now, because the gap in votes is too high. So BJP's vote percentage goes up, but vote percentages don't get you seats in India. Vote percentages mean that you are on your way up. This is not a proportionate representation, that if you get 20% of the vote, you will get 20% of the seats. In the first past the post system, you have to get a critical mass of votes in every constituency, which means your votes, maybe 26%, it can even be 20%, but should be at least one vote more than the next guy. If that doesn't happen, you can't win. So to think that the BJP will get a lot of seats in Tamil Nadu is a bit unrealistic right now. To think that it could make up for a deficit of 25 over Rajiv Gandhi of 1984, that is, I think, at this point, looks like an impossibility. In fact, if you ask me, and I will write something about it, maybe in a future national interest, I think what Prime Minister Narendra Modi is doing right now in Tamil Nadu, in Kerala, is actually setting up his campaign for 2029. Because he's patient. He knows it takes that long to build your party in some place. It's not for immediate gains right now. I mean, he can always surprise you. And I know that when I say so, there will be a pushback from BJP's voters who will say, why can't he sweep Tamil Nadu? Of course, you can say what you want. I'm giving you what I think the situation is and what the data tells us. It's not even my view as much as it's not my opinion. It's what data is telling us. So that 25 gap in Tamil Nadu looks tough. Another state where there's an interesting gap was Maharashtra. Now, Maharashtra is again a state where the Congress party did very well in that election. And you can understand why, because Congress party did not have an ally. Congress party was contesting by itself, and by itself, it pretty much swept Maharashtra. So in Maharashtra, Congress party won 43 seats out of 48. 43 out of 48. The BJP, on the other hand, only got 23. Why? In alliance, they did as well as the Congress party did in 84, but now they were in alliance. So they had given a bunch of seats away to the Shiv Sena in this case. This time, the Shiv Sena is split. Shinde Sena will come with the BJP, as we know. We don't know what the numbers will be. Once again, a reminder that for today's discussion, we are only looking at BJP versus the Congress. We are keeping all the allies and alliances out of this. That's the reason in Tamil Nadu, for example, we have not added the seats that the Congress party's ally ADMK had won there. It's only Congress versus the BJP. So gap of 20 in Maharashtra. And then I will also come to what the BJP could do to narrow these gaps. Then, interestingly, Madhya Pradesh and Chhattisgarh, not much gap. Madhya Pradesh was then the combined state, so Chhattisgarh was a part of it in 1984. Congress party did very well there. Congress party then won 40 out of 40 in combined Madhya Pradesh. BJP, on the other hand, last time, they won all but one, that is 28 seats in Madhya Pradesh. One went to Kamal Nath's son, so they won 28 and in Chhattisgarh also, they won all but two seats. So BJP got 37 seats between Madhya Pradesh and Chhattisgarh, or 37 seats in what used to be Madhya Pradesh. Congress party got 40. So that's a gap of another three seats. Another big gap, that is Odisha. Odisha, the gap was 12. Now 12 is a sizable gap in the aggregate that we are building up to. In Odisha, the Congress got 20 out of 21. BJP did surprisingly well the last time. In Odisha, it got 8 seats. But you can see now in the Prime Minister's language and what Prime Minister is doing when he goes to Odisha, he's almost as if he is offering Naveen Patnaik the same deal as existed between Congress party and ADMK, which is, let us leave parliament to us, we leave you to your assembly. That is the reason, I think, that he praised Naveen Patnaik and he said, under Naveen Patnaik, Odisha has progressed. That is not something that you've heard him say about any chief minister of any state who is not from his party or his alliance. So to me, it sounds like that's almost like declaring him to be an ally without getting a buy-in from Naveen Patnaik, unless something has happened in the background. So there is a gap of 12 between Rajiv 1984 and Modi 2019 in the state of Odisha as well. Again, a very important number, 20. Gap of 20 in Bihar. Therefore, the Congress won 48 seats out of 54. Bihar plus Jharkhand, as it used to be, it had a total of 54 seats. Congress won 48 out of these. Now the BJP itself, once again, I know they had an ally in JDU, but don't remind me of the ally right now. This is a comparison between BJP and Congress party. There the gap is 20, because BJP got 28 seats in these two states, which were then the combined Bihar. So that's a gap of another 20 seats. And then there are gaps elsewhere. I told you that there will be a surprise about the South, and that surprise is the state of Andhra Pradesh. State of Andhra Pradesh, which is now Andhra and Telangana, then had 42 seats. Of these 42 seats, the Congress party had won only 6 seats. BJP in Telangana itself the last time had won 4 seats. So gap is only 2 seats. So it's not as if the Congress party swept all of the South. It did not sweep all of the South. It swept a lot of the South, but not all of the South. Now see, how does this number add up? Again, a gap of 13 in Kerala, because Congress party won 13 seats in 1984. BJP under Narendra Modi has not yet won a seat in Kerala, although they came a little bit closer than you would have expected the last time. So 13 the Congress had, that makes it a gap of another 13. Then the last time in 1984, election had taken place in two phases. Two phases, or maybe say one phase and one delayed phase, one major phase and some parts of the country in a delayed phase. Those parts of the country are specifically Punjab and Assam. Because when Rajiv Gandhi came to power, both states were disturbed areas. In Punjab, there was terrorism for a long time. Operation Blue Star had just taken place, Indira Gandhi's assassination, massacres of Sikhs, all of that had happened. So Punjab was still going to be under president's rule, and it was tough to hold an election there. And also in Assam. In Assam, there was a blockade of everything. Assam, since 1979 onwards, even the supply of crude oil from Assam's oil wells to the rest of the country, to any refineries, was also blockaded. So Assam was a state in complete non-cooperation. 1983, Mrs. Gandhi had forced an assembly election in Assam. That led to the deaths of thousands. The Brahmaputra Valley burnt, and that it gave rise to terrorism also. That election is the one that also caused the Nelly massacre. So after that, the state was very disturbed, and it was not possible to hold a fair or reasonable election there. And Rajiv Gandhi did not want to repeat the error of his mother by forcing an election there. So both of these states then waited for peace accords. In Punjab's case, there was a peace accord signed with Sant Longowal. Unfortunately, it did not last very long, because Sant Harchand Singh Longowal got assassinated just months after he had signed that accord, and things had begun to fall into place in Punjab. But still, there was some kind of peace, and an election was held. And similarly, for Assam also, an election was held in the winter of 1985. After a peace accord between the Assam agitators, that is the student leaders mainly of All Assam Students Union and Assam Gan Parishad, and the central government had been signed. Following that, the election took place. Now, these two elections were unusual. These were unusual in the sense that Congress party had signed these accords knowing that they were going to lose power in these states. And it was considered the right thing to do at that point of time, because if by hook or crook Congress party had again grabbed power in the states, then these two major threats to national security would have only gotten worse. Forget them going away, they would have only gotten worse. So this was an effort to reintegrate the two states by handing over power, or by allowing the local political forces to rise to power. And that's how the Akalis in Punjab and Assam Gan Parishad, that's more important, because Akalis in Punjab were never so stable, at least in that period. But that's how the Assam Gan Parishad also came to power in Assam. And when it comes to these two elections, Punjab, Assam, I will tell you a story in the end, so stay with me. So in the first round or main round of elections, 514 seats had gone for elections. And in the second round, essentially Punjab and Assam, another 27 seats went for elections. In that election, in Punjab, the Congress party won 6 seats. BJP, by the way, in 2019, in partnership with Akali Dal, won 2 seats in Punjab. So that's a gap of 4 seats in Punjab as well. You will see a graphic on your screens showing you what each party got in each state and the gap on the other side, plus and minus. So in Assam, the BJP actually has an advantage against Congress party's 4 in 1984. Now it won 9 seats. So again, once again, if you add it all up, what does it tell us? It tells us that if the BJP has to dream of reaching that figure of 400 plus by itself, It has to do the following. Number one, it has to max out Uttar Pradesh, which means it has to win all 80 out of 80. All 80 out of 80, maybe 3-4 gone to the allies, but it has to max out Uttar Pradesh even more than it has done in the past. So if it got 62 seats on its own in the past, maybe this time it has to get 76 seats in Uttar Pradesh. Otherwise, it cannot reach that number. 76 plus 5 of Uttarakhand, if it wins, it will become 81 seats. So it gets close to the Congress's numbers. Similarly, in the alliances, because Congress Party in 1984 was not fighting in alliances, the BJP has its alliances, particularly in the states of Bihar and Maharashtra. So in these alliances, BJP has to get a lot more seats for itself. It has to be less generous or less reasonable. You can choose your adjective depending on which side you are on. It can be less generous or less reasonable with its allies and take more seats for itself. In Maharashtra and Bihar, in both states, its allies are much weaker than they used to be. In Maharashtra, it's a divided Shiv Sena, which is quite insecure because they worry that the original Shiv Sena votes will go to the Thakre Shiv Sena. So they are worried. They are a pale shadow of what Shiv Sena used to be. Similarly, JDU, Nitish Kumar in Bihar, may be staring at his last term in power. His negotiating position is not as strong as last time. So chances are that the BJP will do that, but it has to get a lot more seats for itself. And then the second more important thing, it has to sweep those seats. Third, it has to get some seats in Andhra. Now, the Congress may not have got many seats in Andhra the last time, but Congress got other seats in other parts of the south which the BJP cannot do. So for BJP to get to that 360, 350, 360, 370, in this case, for the purposes of this fanciful discussion, we are looking at 400 as the bar. They have to get a bunch of seats in Andhra Pradesh. Now, for that, they will need an ally. Will Jagan be their ally? Unlikely so far. It seems that Jagan will go into alliance with BJP. That's also because Andhra Pradesh has a sizable minority vote, which Jagan at this point owns. On the other hand, will the BJP then go with the other likely ally, that is Telugu Desam Party? Telugu Desam Party, Chandrababu Naidu is its leader. They've been not just open to the idea, they are very keen on the idea of an alliance with the BJP because they've now been in opposition for quite some time in their state. They are feeling the heat of the state's investigating agencies as well. They may be losing their cadres because these parties, their cadre cannot stay out of power for that long. They need something, they need power. They need some patronage. And if they don't get it for too long, they begin to break up. So I think it's reasonable to say that Telugu Desam Party would be quite keen for an alliance with the BJP. A few opinion polls that have come out of Andhra, I don't know how reliable they are, but all of them are saying the same thing. They are saying that this time TDP already is going to improve its vote percentage because an anti-incumbency may also be setting in on Jagan. So this is a two-party state. If BJP can inveigle itself into the situation or muscle itself into the situation, then it can add some seats to its tally there. Next is alliance with Shiromani Akali Dal. Once again, looks like both parties are keen. Although in my assessment, I would see the possibility of even an alliance like that winning many more seats in Punjab very low, because in Punjab the BJP is quite unpopular. The Akalis have also been unpopular. So together, combined, will people vote for a national idea? I don't know, because Aam Aadmi Party, the Congress are both strong there. But once again, if the anti-BJP, anti-Akali vote gets divided between Aam Aadmi Party and the Congress Party, then anything could happen. So once again, that alliance in Punjab, which I see as quite possible, I will not say it is inevitable, but it's quite possible, that will add to BJP seats. Then Karnataka. Karnataka BJP has to maintain its numbers, which will be a little bit challenging, because last time they got 25 plus 1. One was an independent who went along with the BJP. 25 plus 1 in a total number of seats of 28. This time, because they have allies in JDS, that is Devagowda's party, they might end up giving some seats to them. And whatever it is, I suspect it will be more than 2 seats. Also, Congress Party is in power there. So it's difficult to say what will happen, but BJP has to get at least as many seats in Karnataka as they did the last time, which pretty much means sweeping the state. And then I will list for you BJP's pain points. BJP's pain points, Odisha, Tamil Nadu, Andhra, Kerala, where they had nothing, and that's where again Congress party had a gain of 13, and Punjab. These five major states are BJP's pain points. And having said this, I told you I will tell you a story at the end of this episode. This story refers to the election campaign in Assam of 1985. That is when, some of you might remember, Amitabh Bachchan was a Congress party MP. He had won his election in Allahabad in 1984, the same election that Rajiv Gandhi swept, and where he won 83 seats out of 85 in Uttar Pradesh. That's when Amitabh Bachchan had defeated Hemwati Nandan Bahuguna, the old political stalwart, formerly of the Congress party, in Allahabad. And he was an MP. So he was sent to Assam to campaign on behalf of the Congress party. Now what happened in this case? First, some tamasha happened because in Assam, in 1985, it was difficult to find bottles of Bisleri. Now you might think Bisleri is available everywhere. When I worked in the Northeast for 3 years, I drank water from anywhere. I paid the price for it because you carry many infections and it's quite distressing, those infections and repeated treatments with amoebicides because you get persistent amoebias. It wasn't like the RO systems of today, the water wasn't so clean and you rarely found bottled water. Now for Amitabh Bachchan, it became quite a challenge to find Bisleri because that is the brand he drank those days. There wasn't much competition also those days. So first of all, there was tension over that. Finally, they found some bottles in a hotel, so that problem was sorted out. And then something else happened, and that is something that I will read out to you. So here it goes, and I'm reading from myself now, Jan 15, 1986, India Today. It was a cover story. So I said that Congress party got desperate because they knew that they were not winning. They sent Amitabh Bachchan there, but the Bachchan magic failed to work and he faced more hostile crowds than he could possibly be used to. There were absurd episodes too. Midway through his 3-day campaign, there was panic as the organizers ran out of the Bisleri mineral water, which he always drinks. The brand was not available in Guwahati, but finally one of the hotels was able to produce a few bottles left over from the West Indies cricket team's tour, because that tour had taken place recently. But worse was yet to come. On the last day of his campaign, his helicopter landed by mistake in the very midst of an AGP meeting. The superstar was greeted with stones and chappals. "Did you see those dents on the helicopter?" he was to exclaim later, and I was there. He said, "Did you see the dents on the helicopter?" because they threw stones at the helicopter. And he was forced to get away. But the drama did not end there. On taking off, the pilot realized that he did not have enough room to make height, because he was taking off. He had to go a little bit ahead to make height, but he did not have the room to make height because other people had, crowds had come onto the helipad. On taking off, the pilot realized that he did not have enough room to make height at the usual angle because crowds had converged on the helipad. Nor could he land for fear of hitting people on the ground. He was now left with no choice but to ask some of the passengers to jump out of the helicopter to reduce weight so that the chopper could fly off at a steeper angle. Bachchan's secretary Srinivasan and state Congress High campaign chief Bhuvneshwar Kalita had to finally perform a real-life Bachchan stunt by jumping out of an airborne helicopter and face hostile crowds. And Bhuvneshwar Kalita, by the way, since we are doing storytelling, he made an equally spectacular jump in his political life as well. He continued to rise in Congress party, became PCC chief in Assam, was Rajya Sabha chief whip for the party, and one day, that was the morning when the amendments on Article 370 on Kashmir were moved. That morning, as spectacularly as he might have jumped from Amitabh Bachchan's helicopter, he also jumped from the Congress party to the BJP, where he now resides. Now that said, I found something else later, just researching on this, in terms of whether Bachchan had himself said something about it. I had not had the opportunity to discuss it with him, although I regret it. Next time I meet him, in fact, I saw him last weekend, if it had occurred to me, I would have asked him. Next time I will. But I find something that he wrote on a blog, at least reference to something he wrote on a blog. And that is his explanation of why he gave up politics. So people think that he gave up politics, he says, because of all the controversies, Bofors, allegations against Amitabh Bachchan, his brother. But he says that when this helicopter incident took place in Assam, that is when he got his epiphany, if you might
choose to call it that way. And he said that
in that helicopter incident, in the melee, some youngster came and passed a note on to him. And the youngster said, and I'm quoting it supposedly from a Bachchan blog, "Mr. Bachchan, I'm a big fan of yours, but I am with the opposite party. You caused me a great problem because I don't know who to support. So we love you, we respect you, but go away, don't bother with politics." And he says, the explanation he gives for having given up politics is that. I don't know what the absolute truth is. Sometimes these things happen as a combination of many factors. But this is what really happened. It was that unusual election that got Rajiv Gandhi 414 seats. For Narendra Modi, we have now shown you the degree of difficulty if he has to get close to 400. It doesn't look impossible, but it looks very, very tough.